quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
This is Stuart Venner. I tell it as I see it, and I see it as it is.
It was interesting, but it was also stupid.
This is Stuart Venner. I want to welcome you again to this week's show. We've got a great lineup of guests. We're speaking to Roseanne Montillo. She's the author of a book, A Lady and Her Monsters. It's a story of Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, and how she really found the subject and thought about doing this. We're speaking to someone called Bishop. He goes by one name. He was a criminal, a gang member, and he became a police informant. And for 4 years, he's going to tell us about the truth of organized crime. We're speaking to Robert Shaines. Robert has got quite an impressive resume, and he's going to talk about the secrets of nuclear proliferation. Very, very scary interview, and I think you're going to enjoy it. And finally, we're talking to Robin Wheeler. Robin is a woman who has suffered with anger management, and as many of us do, and she's going to tell us how she learned to control her anger management and what many of us can do to help it. Thank you. Please stay tuned.
Dr. Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
You're putting me on.
No, it's pronounced Frankenstein.
Do you also say Frederick?
No, Frederick.
Well, why isn't it Frederick Frankenstein?
It isn't, it's Frederick Frankenstein.
I see.
You must be Igor.
No, it's pronounced Igor.
But they told me it was Igor.
Well, they were wrong then, weren't they?
In other words, his veins, his feet, his hands, his organs would all have to be increased in size.
Exactly.
He would have an enormous Schwanzstucke.
That goes without saying.
Oof.
He's going to be very popular.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
May I now present a cultured, sophisticated man about town. Hit it!
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes, or cutaway coat, perfect fits. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper, trying mighty hard to look like Gary Cooper.
Cooper, Cooper!
Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or Rumbarellas in their mitts.
I've got a real interesting guest on the line. We're speaking to Roseanne Montillo. Roseanne is the author of a book, quite a good-selling book, I might say, The Lady and Her Monsters. And it talks about Mary Shelley, the author of Frankenstein, and how she evolved and how she actually wrote this book. Roseanne, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it is really my pleasure to have you on. So, from understanding this right, Mary Shelley, who wrote the Frankenstein book, actually was really recounting the things that were happening down in those ages with medical experimentation and so forth.
She did. Initially, she made it sound as if the whole story came out of her imagination, but really, these were all experiments that she had heard about it beforehand from her father, from her husband, from relatives, people who visited her home. And also she used to watch hangings and things that were happening around her, around London as well. So really, Frankenstein is a collection of tales, different tales that were plucked from law, medicine, religion, politics, all that were happening at the same time that Mary Shelley was living in England.
Very interesting. And people were actually trying to create life from dead bodies back then?
They were. It was actually a very fashionable business, if you want to call it that. They were. Business may not be the right word for it, but neither, I guess, is a spectacle, which it became one soon thereafter. People wanted very much to try and see if they could reconnect to the dead, if they could bring him back to life, if they could be the first ones, the English especially, if they could be the first ones to bring him back to a living situation for many reasons. I mean, some of them were practical. They needed people to go work, you know, and take care of their own families. And some of them were just, they were just scientists. They wanted to see what kind of boundaries they could cross.
Fascinating. I know my friend Fred Claridge has been trying to bring his dead schwanz back to life for years.
A lot of people try to bring back things from everywhere.
That's really interesting. And how did you get into writing something like this?
Well, I actually teach for Emerson College here in Boston, and I was teaching a class called Forbidden Knowledge, of all things. And Frankenstein was on the syllabi. I had been reading it, of course, ever since I was a little girl. And my students, they had just come, they're freshmen, they had just come from high school where they had to deal with Frankenstein once again. So I needed to find something more interesting than just the regular legend that everybody, or at least everybody who has read the book, knows about. The idea that she was, Mary Shelley was on the lake with her husband and a couple of friends, and the story just came to her, which was not entirely true. So I wanted my students to know that there was more to it than just legend. It was actually based in history and science and medicine and folklore and the law, criminality. It had this really unusual background. And my students enjoyed it, especially the gruesome portions of it, of course. But it took off from there. I felt that I had enough that maybe a book was warranted. And
well,
it was interesting.
It's really fascinating. And now you talk about Luigi Galvani.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about him. He helped influence her, I imagine.
He was a doctor from Bologna. He was actually the first one who tried to reanimate not dead bodies, but frogs. He found that if you poked a dead frog with some kind of a metallic arc, they could be stimulated and movements would come back. And he believed that with a little more science, a little more experimentation, he could bring him back to life.
Wow.
It was actually his nephew who took off from there once Galvani passed away. And he felt that it was all fine and dandy to bring back a frog, but there was more to it. Wouldn't it be fun to bring back a person? I mean, you can only get so many frogs, you know, and cows and animals and dogs. I mean, what people really wanted to see was a man coming back to life. And his Galvani's nephew, Giovanni Aldini, was the one that first connected with the idea of bringing someone, a man, back to life.
It's fascinating. You know, my mother was an actress, and she actually played the part of the little girl in The Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and in fact, she said she had nightmares that would just scare her to death, but she said Boris Karloff was really a very, very nice man. He was very kind. But
my students tell me the same thing after they had done with the class. They're like, thank you.
Oh, you're really scared.
It's going to be nightmares forever.
Tell us how we can get your book and a little bit about it.
Well, you can get the book on Amazon, of course, Barnes & Noble, any bookstore out there. You can get it online, anywhere that you can buy a book. Practically, college
right.
bookstores and anywhere. I even saw it in Walmart, so that's wonderful. So
that is
everywhere
wonderful.
That you can, you know, it's regular nonfiction, adult nonfiction. You will find it anywhere, and it will be under either the heading of science, medicine, general nonfiction. So it's in there in several places.
Well, I tell you, it's one I'm going to buy, and I want to read it because it's a fascinating story, and nobody ever thought of Mary Shelley from this aspect. I know I never did.
Thank you very much.
And,
yeah, she was
again,
quite the scientist and the science fanatic.
Oh, it's fascinating, and we're speaking to Roseanne Montillo, and her book is The Lady and Her Monsters, and it's a story of Mary Shelley, who wrote the book Frankenstein, and what's made her write such a thing. And it really, according to Roseanne, it wasn't just a figment of her imagination. It was really a reflection of the times. Roseanne, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, buyyourtimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for $1, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Folks, welcome back to the show. I've got a really fascinating guest on the phone. We're speaking to Bishop. He goes by one name, Bishop. Bishop is the author of a book, Both Sides of the Fence. And Bishop was a former mobster, I guess. He was in organized crime, and he became a double agent working for the Department of Justice. Bishop, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Stuart. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. You got quite a fascinating life. Are you in witness protection right now?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
We turned it down.
Can tell us a little bit about what you did and how you got into this.
I guess I grew up just like anybody else in small town America, and then moved to the city and had a praying mother and a praying father, and grew up in church. every time the door opened, we were there Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. It seemed like any day that ended in Y, my mom would find a way to go to church. But during that time, in my late teens, early 20s, we lost my mother to an accident. And
I'm sorry.
I got mad at God, shook my fist at him and said, I'm done with it. And from that, I went the total opposite. I went and started being a bar owner and, you know, just anything I could get into, I got into. Drug dealing, you know, gun selling, gambling, it didn't matter. And ended up doing some time in prison. And during that time, I gave my life back to Christ. And I know a lot of people talk about jailhouse religion, but to me it was different because I actually met, well, not physically. I was introduced to a God that wasn't my parents' God, but it was my God. It was a personal relationship with Jesus. And I got out of prison. When I got out, I had thought nothing about it, and nothing about my past. I was just trying to be Joe Citizen and do the right thing. And I was actually an acting youth pastor at a local church. And the Department of Justice showed up and asked me, could I get back in with my old friends? And if I could, they'd like for me to work for them. And me and my wife prayed about it many hours and thought it through. And we went in and started working undercover for them and did that initially to go in and find some bad cops, and it turned into drug deals and gun sales, and then we found out we were selling people. And
really? What prostitution?
Prostitution, yeah.
Hmm.
And it just, you know, it really hit a nerve with us, and we did that for 4 years, and then I came out, and here we are, both sides of the fence, the book. And
fascinating. It must have been pretty hard for you to go back doing it. Of course, you knew that you had an ultimate goal of putting these people away and stopping them.
Right. Well, you know, you become friends with those guys. I lived with them every day for 4 years, and you see their families, meet their families. You go to funerals. You go to the hospital. You do everything that, you know, the church does with people in the church. You know, that's your family.
Sure.
And that's the part. That was hard, but you know the end goal is to stop this stuff.
It must have been pretty hard when you turned them in at the end after 4 years of this.
Yeah, it was rough.
I bet it was. Now, these were not the mafia as we know the mafia. This was a street gang or a motorcycle gang. Is that right?
It was a motorcycle club. I was with a 1% club. You got the four big ones. For people who don't know what that is, you've got the Hells Angels, Outlaws, Bandidos, and Pagans. And I was in one of those organizations, and that's what went down.
Now, you've written this book. Can you tell us about your book?
It's basically the story of redemption. It's showing how God can use anybody, and if you'll just allow him to. So it's just a story of redemption. It's a story of how God can use anybody, and he leaves his hand on you and protects you through whatever, the thick and thin. And that's it. It's the story of my life before the case, during the case, and after the case. And,
when you were doing this, was your life in danger at many times?
Yeah, the whole time. And the only reason we had to quit doing it is because there was a hit put out on me.
Really?
So, yeah, that's why I wear a mask and talk different than I did before. So.
Now, is the hit still out on you?
Yes.
And you're not in the witness protection program. How are you hiding out? I mean, what are you doing?
I wear a mask, and I'm very careful, and I hire my own security folks.
You wear a mask. Well, wouldn't that kind of stand out with a mask on?
No, I don't do it when I'm just out and about. I just don't go very many places.
I see. So I'm not going to ask you where you are, because that would not be a good question. You wouldn't answer it anyway. But
right.
What do you think the biggest problem today is? Drugs, human trafficking? What do you think is the worst thing that we're facing?
I think human trafficking, by far, is the number one. Department of Justice says it's number two, next to drug trafficking and guns. But, you know, we don't have the numbers yet. We just started really digging in to those numbers and those stats.
When you say human trafficking, is this kidnapping girls and putting them into prostitution or selling them in foreign countries? What do you mean by human trafficking?
Here in the United States, 100,000 U.S. children are exploited domestically to the sex trade. 300,000 children are at risk of becoming sexual commodities. And the average age is 13 years old when these kids are entering into prostitution. Average, Stuart, if you look at it, that means there's 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 9-year-old, 11-year-old, you know, you have to have those children to come up with average, if you go by definition. We have 1.5 million gang members in 33,000 gangs domestically, and the gangs have learned over time that it's easier to sell a girl or a boy out of a hotel room than it is to sell a key of cocaine, and you're going to get caught and go to prison forever. And they can make $250,000 off one victim.
My God.
So,
and where are these children going? Where in the world are they going?
Here, in the United States.
Here in this country. They're not sending them out overseas. They're keeping them in this country.
Right. That's the part everyone's missing. They think that everything is overseas, and that's what our media has taught us over and over and over. I mean, human trafficking is a $32 billion a year. It makes more. Industry. It makes more than Google, Starbucks, McDonald's, any of that, right? And $9.8 billion of that is here in the United States for the sex trade. And the gangs are the ones controlling it, the gangs and the cartels. And that's what my book and my ministry does, is it exposes that and shows you how to see the signs of that and what's going on and what you can do to help us combat it.
Fascinating. Again, we're speaking to Bishop, and Bishop's book is Both Sides of the Fence, The Inside Truth on Organized Crime. And Bishop, how can people get your book? Where is it available?
It's available everywhere at the end of November. It went to print November 5th, but Amazon.com, Both Sides of the Fence, Bishop. You can get it right there on Kindle and Barnes & Noble and the whole nine yards.
Well, Bishop, I want to thank you again for coming on the phone on the show with me, and I can't wait to read that book because it's pretty fascinating and pretty scary, I might say. Bishop, thank you again for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Morning, a missionary advertises with neon sign. He tells the native population that civilization is fine. And three educated savages holler from a bamboo tree. That civilization is a thing for me to see.
So bongo, 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 I don't wanna leave the Congo. Oh, no, 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 no. Bingo, bango, bongle, I'm so happy in the jungle I refuse to go. Don't want no bright lights, false teeth, doorbells, landlords, I make it clear.
That no matter how they coax him,
I'll stay right here. I look through a magazine the missionary's wife concealed.
Magazine? What happens?
I see how people who are civilized bung you with automobiles.
You know you can get hurt that way, Daniel?
At the movies they have got to pay many coconuts to see.
What do they see, Donnie?
Uncivilized pictures that the newsreel tapes of me.
bongo, 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 he don't wanna leave the Congo, no, 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 no. Bingo, bango, bongo, he's so happy in the jungle, he refused to go.
Don't want no penthouse, bathtub, streetcars, taxis, noise in my ear.
So no matter how they coax him,
I'll stay right here.
They hurry like savages to get aboard an iron train,
the Tringalungu Hula Humble Express.
And though it's smoky and it's crowded, they're too civilized to complain.
Aloka toho sahi mahena. When they've got 2 weeks vacation, they hurry to vacation ground.
What do they do, Donnie?
They swim and they fish, but that's what I do all year round.
So, bongo, 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 I don't wanna leave the Congo, no, 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 no. Bingo, bango, bongo, I'm so happy in the jungle, I refuse to go.
Don't want no jailhouse,
shotgun,
fish hooks,
golf club,
I got my spears.
So no matter how they coax him,
I'll stay right here.
They have things like the autumn bomb,
so I think I'll stay where I am.
Civilization, I'll stay right here.
Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking to Robert Shaines. Robert's a pretty interesting guy. He's an author of a book, Secrets in Peacetime, Nuclear Proliferation, and that's something I think is pretty timely and something we need to talk about. Robert, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Stuart. Thank you for inviting me.
Nuclear proliferation. I guess the Mideast is the hot spot today.
Well, the Mideast and Iran, of course, the talks with Iran, which just broke off, involve nuclear proliferation.
Well, how can anyone in their right mind think that Iran is not trying to achieve a nuclear bomb?
I agree with that statement. I don't think anybody in their right mind can afford to rely on the truthfulness of the Iranians and negotiating whatever they're trying to negotiate now, to negotiate away sanctions which are being pursued by the United States and other Western powers against Iran to stop them from enriching uranium with the goal of producing a weapon.
Well, when the time comes that they do, which I think that's going to happen, I personally think it's going to happen, is Israel going to do it themselves, or are we going to cover their back?
From my view of things, I think Israel will do it themselves with certain assurances from the United States and other Western countries.
Well, I kind of agree with you there. I don't think they have any choice but to stop this horrible country, this horrible regime. And you know what, I think all the talk and all of the negotiations and sanctions, it comes down to the one main motto and theme, really, of Israel is never again.
I know. Understood. You know, back in the 90s, I was a contractor with the Defense Nuclear Agency, which was run out of the Secretary of Defense Office.
Yes.
And we were involved in administering the Cooperative Threat Reduction Treaty with the idea that the Russians were going to cease manufacturing nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction. And one of the things that stood out in my mind working with various Russian Ministry of Defense people was that Russia's economy through the 90s in large measure depended on its sale of weapons and weapons systems.
Right, that's big business.
Yeah, and it still does. And Russia, of course, is counting on Iran as one of its major customers for weapons, and Iran in turn supplies weapons to outfits like Hezbollah, Syria, and other terrorist groups,
right,
which we are directly opposed to. And it's sort of a crazy world when you look at it, because a lot of the Russian officials that I dealt with were really upstanding people, and yet their government policy was that they were going to supply these weapons to their favored customers.
Yes, but you see, Russia, I don't think, would ever use weapons against us, because they're basically a civilized society.
I agree with that.
Where these Iranians and the Arabs and the Hezbollah and these terrorist organizations, they just have no common sense. They just think that dying is a great thing.
Well, more than dying, they think that killing is a great thing, too.
That's right. I remember I was I guess I was a young man, 1962, I was about 18, 19 years old, when the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred, and Russia, of course, did back down, and, you know, Kennedy was given all the credit for this. Personally, I think that had Nixon been elected president, we would never have had a Cuban Missile Crisis, because Khrushchev knew better than to test him.
Yeah. Well, you know, very interestingly, in looking back at that time, I'll give credit to one Russian naval captain who was commanding a nuclear submarine operated by the Russians, who determined that he was not going to permit a conflagration, and had a lot to do with turning back of the Russian ships.
Interesting. But do you think that, I mean, Kennedy was young president, untested, unknown, and Khrushchev was an old war horse. Do you think he would have tested Nixon?
I think Khrushchev would have tested Nixon.
You do?
The military in Russia had great influence over Russian foreign policy.
Interesting.
Just in this country, the military still has great influence over our foreign policy. And as President Eisenhower said in one of his speeches, beware of the military defense alliance. And, you know, the defense industry is largely responsible for keeping our economy going, too.
Do you think our President Obama really wants to disarm Iran? Or do you think he really would, in the back of his mind, would like them to have a nuclear weapon?
No, I think he wants to disarm them. I wouldn't.
I hope to God you're right.
Be that Machiavellian about it.
I hope you're right. He scares me. I don't understand him.
No, I understand. Well, obviously, he held out his hand to various Middle Eastern countries, trying to bring them into the fold of the U.S. Peace umbrella. That hasn't worked, and I think he realizes that now. You have a very interesting situation developing now where Saudi Arabia and the Israelis are on the same side of the fence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Saudis don't want a nuclear-armed Iran.
Exactly.
If that happens, you're going to see all of these countries race for nuclear power, I would think, nuclear bombs.
Yeah, well, they are, but they're not announcing it. Possessing nuclear weapons seems to be a mission of various heads of state, figuring that it puts them into the situation of being a world power able
sure.
to dictate to other nations.
But personally, Robert, I think that in my own mind, I think that Netanyahu and Israel have a plan already in work and would not hesitate to take that out.
Well, I think Netanyahu would take a deep breath before moving forward.
Well, I think he would have to.
But I think he would if forced to do so. I think he's a very determined leader.
Yes. Can you tell us about your book? Because it sounds pretty interesting, and how people can
sure.
get it.
My book is really based on the fact that back in the early part of the 1990s, I worked in Russia for several years, and I was working with many of the Russian military officials, Russian Ministry of Defense Industries, And the idea of the Cooperative Threat Reduction Treaty was to convince Russia to stop manufacturing weapons of mass destruction. That, when I say Russia, included some of the other larger Soviet states,
right,
including Ukraine, Kazakhstan, etc. And the General Alexander Lebed, who had been National Security Advisor under the Yeltsin administration, told six visiting U.S. senators that Russia had produced 250 bombs, which could fit in nuclear bombs, plutonium-based,
my God,
that could fit into a suitcase.
Enough to blow up the world, isn't it?
Yeah, and that the Soviets had built these weapons with the idea of planting them in major cities around the U.S., next Western nations, so that in the event their missile systems and bombers couldn't reach the so-called enemy territories, that they'd be able to take out cities and governmental leaders in these areas.
Scary as hell. Robert, tell us about your book.
Okay. Well, my book is based on the fact that it was reported that 68 of these bombs never showed up in the Russian arsenal when the Soviet Union fell.
Okay.
And it's a fictional story, but it's based on various facts that I learned when I was working over in Russia.
And your book is called Secrets in Peacetime, Nuclear Proliferation?
Secrets in Time of Peace, actually. And how the
I see.
Allied powers actually didn't want to alarm the populations of the various countries by letting it be known that there were a number, whether it's 68 or 50 of these bombs loose in the world, which were never accounted for.
Unbelievable. Yes. Everybody, we're talking to Robert Shaines, and his book is Secrets in a Time of Peace, and you're going to learn a lot about some scary things in nuclear proliferation. Before we leave, I want to ask you one question. What do you think of Sheldon Adelson's idea for negotiation, drop an atom bomb in the Sahara Desert?
Mr. Adelson sounds like a guy that I have breakfast with most mornings who says the same thing. But I think that's a little over the top.
It would get their attention.
Yeah, it certainly would.
Robert, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Bum, bum. feel pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and gay, and I pity any girl who isn't me today.
La 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 la.
I feel charming, oh so charming. It's charming, how charming I feel.
Move your ass, dipshit!
And so pretty that I hardly can believe I'm real.
La 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 la. Burn in hell!
See that pretty girl in the mirror there?
What mirror where?
Who could that attractive girl be?
Who, which one where? Hum,
such a pretty face, hum, such a pretty nose, hum, such a pretty smile, hum, such a pretty nose.
Hum.
Yes. I feel stunning.
You feel stunning.
And entrancing.
And entrancing.
Feel like running and dancing for joy.
For I love.
Folks, welcome back to the show. We're speaking to Robin Wheeler. Robin is the author of Born Mad and 104 Ways to Starve Your Anger and Feed Your Soul. That's a mouthful. But I guess from what I'm gathering is you're an angry lady, Robin.
Well, I used to be, very much so.
But you're not angry anymore?
Hopefully not.
Well, there's a lot of people out there with anger management. That need anger management, let's put it this way. How did you discover that you were in need of this, and how did you tell us your story, would you?
Yes, it's actually quite an incredible story. I didn't really realize that I was so angry until I got to be in my mid-40s, and I just had a series of things that happened to me that I had difficulty coping with and dealing with, and I actually became suicidal. And
oh, really?
That was back in 08 and 09, and I was waking up mad. I mean, I hadn't even stepped out of bed yet. I would just open my eyes, and I was mad.
You sound like my wife.
So, yeah, I went to take an anger management course, and it didn't really help. And I was wondering what was wrong with me that, you know, an anger management course wouldn't help me. And so I went to a counselor, and I saw a counselor for about 2 years. And one day I called her up, and I was crying, and I said, you have to help me, or I'm going to end this. I said, I don't care what you have to do. I said, I don't care if it's a lobotomy, you know, hypnosis, pot brownies, an exorcism, whatever you got in your bag of tricks, pull it out, because I need it.
I kind of like lobotomies. I remember,
yeah.
Francis Farmer, that I think they said lobotomies bring them home.
Yeah, so I was pretty miserable if I was, you know, willing to go through that. So she asked me if I would see a psychiatrist, which I said yes. And he actually diagnosed me with a form of mild depression, which can cause chronic anger.
Now say that again, mild what? I didn't get that.
A mild form of depression. It's called
okay.
Dysthymic disorder.
So are you bipolar, manic depressive? Is
no, it? No. It's actually a unipolar depression. So it's kind of like a little insidious depression, which is always there, but you may not really realize that you have it.
Okay.
For me, I never really felt depressed every day. I mean, I got up, I held down a job, you know, I did everything, everyday things. But I just got frustrated really easily, and I looked at the negative side of things, and I was very, I had poor self-esteem, and just very pessimistic, and when I stayed angry for a long time. It wasn't like I got over it in 10 minutes.
Right.
I stayed angry for a very, very long time. So,
Is there medicine you can take for this?
I was put on medication, antidepressant, and within 3 months I felt better. I just felt like I had a brain transplant. I mean, it was just that.
Would you say
dramatic.
Something like Abilify, something like that?
I was actually put on Prozac.
Okay.
So, and within about 4 months of taking Prozac, I was writing Born Mad. I wanted to get my story out there of,
you know, what had caused me to be so angry all those years, and how I got rid of it. And
now, are you still on Prozac?
I am on Zoloft right now.
Okay.
I was on Prozac for about 3 years, and it kind of dissipated after a while. You know, it didn't have the same effect. And so I was changed to Zoloft a couple of months ago.
Very interesting. And now you've written a book to try to help people with this.
I did. So I wrote Born Mad. After I was diagnosed, I went to the internet. I wanted to find a story from someone else who had been diagnosed with dysthymic disorder to see if they experienced it the same way I did. And I was unable to find any such story. And I couldn't even really find a support group for people with dysthymic disorder. It's just kind of lumped in with depression. And since it's mild compared to bipolar and schizophrenia, a lot of times it's not talked about and just kind of swept under the rug, and
right.
People are told, you know, just get over it and that type of thing.
Well, most people, I guess the unipolar is kind of unusual. You don't hear that much about that.
Right. And again, I never really realized that I was depressed, you know, until I got on medication and I went, whoa, this is the way other people feel, you know. So now I look back on it and, you know,
wow.
I can see now that I was, but back then I just thought it was me. This disorder usually occurs in early childhood or early adolescence.
How did you react with other people? Were you violent, or were you just words,
no,
or was it actions, or did you hit people?
Yeah,
what did you do?
I just was mean and angry and just didn't speak to anybody, you know, after I called them names. And I didn't speak to anybody, you know, my poor husband. I mean, sometimes I didn't speak to him for days, you know, so he just kind of stayed away and, you know, let me do my own thing. And
are you still
married
to him?
I am still married to him, and he has
been
asked.
Well, he deserves a medal.
He does. When we go to speaking engagements, he'll often go with me when I do a speaking engagement, and some people will want to ask him questions. And one of the questions is, why did you stay married to her? And he says, well, I loved her. So he stayed with me all those years just because he loved me. So, and I always thought it was his problem and not mine. And now I can realize that, my gosh, the man's a saint for putting up with me.
Well, this is fascinating. Tell us how we can find your book and how people can read it, Robin.
Both books, Born Mad and The 104 Ways to Starve Your Anger and Feed Your Soul, are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and they're also on my website, which is robinwheeler.com, and Robin is spelled with a Y, R-O-B-Y-N.
Okay, so it's robinwheeler.com, R-O-B-Y-N-W-H-E-E-L-E-R. So if
right.
you find yourself pissed off all the time or angry,
right.
you might just be suffering with depression and with dysthymic disorder, like Robin,
correct.
And you need medicine. This is something you can't just talk to someone about or take classes. You need real medicine, right? I guess that's
exactly.
what you're trying to say. I mean, everybody can go to counselors, you can counsel till you're blue in the face, but you got to take the proper medicine to cure yourself.
Right, exactly.
Robin, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I think a lot of people are going to learn a lot about this, and I'm personally going to read this book, Born Mad and 104 Ways to Starve Your Anger and Feed Your Soul. Robin, thank you very much.
Are you in the terrible position of owing more than your real estate is worth? It just doesn't make sense to throw more good money after bad. At some point, it does make good sense to cut your losses. Don't count on failed government programs that in the end make your problem even worse. We are years away from a housing recovery. Disposing of it incorrectly could create disastrous tax consequences and ruin your credit. You could even pay income tax on the lender's loss. I'm Stuart Venner, president of the Wilshire Holding Group. With over 18 years' experience, we have the proven solution to your problem. A way to dispose of that upside-down property without incurring tax liability and minimize any negative credit. Don't walk away from the property. Call us first. Go to realtycrisis.com or call 877-94-HELP-ME. That's realtycrisis.com, realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME. Don't lie awake nights worrying. We're here to help you. Realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME. Realtycrisis.com, 877-94-HELP-ME.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Obamacare, let it treat you if you dare. Obamacare, we don't need it anywhere. We'll all get left with nothing, but they'll tell us that it's fair. Obamacare, let it treat you if you dare. Obamacare, we don't need it anywhere. We'll all get left with nothing, but they'll tell us that it's fair. Well, I called up my doctor, 'cause my arm wouldn't work. He told me first to call some government clerk. Obamacare, let it treat you if you dare. Obamacare, we don't need it anywhere. We'll all get left with nothing, but they'll tell us that it's fair. Well, they tell me that my taxes really have to go up, 'cause we keep pouring money in a bottomless cup. Obamacare, let it treat you if you dare. Obamacare, we don't need it anywhere. We'll all get left with nothing, but they'll tell us that it's fair. Anything, we'll see what this brings. Watch your doctor be a puppet pulled by government strings. Obamacare, let it treat you if you dare. Obamacare, we don't need it anywhere. Well, I'll get left with nothing, but they'll tell us that it's fair. Obamacare, let it treat you if you dare. Obamacare, we don't need it anywhere. We'll all get left with nothing, but they'll tell us that it's fair.
I ain't wet myself.
Aren't you ashamed?
Good night, until we meet again. Adios, au revoir, I'll be the same.